Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In a recent op-ed for The Guardian, Senator Bernie Sanders, chair of the Senate Budget Committee, wrote that the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill will not only substantially improve the lives of working people, elderly people, the sick, and the poor, but also in an unprecedented way address the threat of climate change. More than any other legislation in U.S. history, it will transform our energy system away from fossil fuels and into energy efficiency and sustainable energy. The bill recently passed the Senate by a 50 to 49 vote. Not one Republican voted for it. This is a major, major bill. First, we'll tell you about the politics behind the bill. Progressive House Democrats say they will vote for the watered-down infrastructure bill, the one we talked about on Monday, if the reconciliation bill passes simultaneously. Nine conservative and moderate Democrats sent Speaker Nancy Pelosi a letter demanding a vote on the infrastructure bill now. In the House, Democrats can only afford to lose three members on party-line votes. Now, the reconciliation budget bill does not need one Republican vote to pass, but all 50 Senate Democrats must vote yes. So the next few months are sure to be pretty intense. Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema have already said the bill is too big. Committees must submit their policies to Senator Sanders' panel by September 15th. So now is the time to make your voices heard. Joining us to talk about the details and politics behind this bill is Arthur Delaney, senior reporter for HuffPost, where he covers politics and the economy. Hi, Arthur. Welcome back to the show.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Arthur. You have written about this massive bill, and oh my gosh, there's just so much in it. This really would transform people's lives at all levels.
That's true. There's so much that they intend to put in it, but we haven't actually seen the bill yet. We've only seen their outline, and it really seems like the stuff in their outline is more ambitious than what they'll ultimately wind up, especially because they've got people like Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia saying the overall price tag is too high.
Right. And so that's why the next couple of months are going to be pretty intense. I mean, what's pretty amazing already, Arthur, is you've got progressives slamming Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin publicly on Twitter. I mean, that's not unusual, but they're already going at it. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez tweeted, "Good luck tanking your own party's investment on childcare, climate action, and infrastructure while presuming you'll survive a three-vote House margin." Representative Rashida Tlaib accused Kristen Sinema of not caring about Arizona floods, wildfires across the West, and aging infrastructure. So this is probably going to be a very public fight. I mean, really, it already is.
It already is, and it's going to come down to who's got votes in the House. And there's a group of moderates who are more aligned with the Sinemas and the Manchins in the Senate who want assurances that the House will pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill that Sinema and Manchin helped write before they even get to the reconciliation bill that has all this other stuff, the sort of soft infrastructure stuff like child care and parental benefits. But there are also the congressmen that you mentioned, Ocasio-Cortez and Rashida Tlaib, who have as much, you know, theoretically have just as much leverage as the moderates, given how slim the Democratic majority is in the House. So we're going to have a vote on Monday where we'll really see, we'll begin to see how this will play out.
And what is the vote on Monday?
Well, Speaker Pelosi is setting up a rule, which is, you know, the thing that describes the vote process. And my understanding is that the Speaker wants a rule that is simultaneously both a vote for infrastructure and for reconciliation. And what we're waiting to see is whether the moderates who've, you know, put out a letter sort of formally threatening not to do this, will they withhold their support from it? And it looks like Pelosi is not blinking in the face of their threat. You know, we'll just have to see what happens. But that's the Democrats, the Democratic leaders the whole time have said, we've got to do this two tracks. You have the bipartisan infrastructure bill, but it moves in tandem with the reconciliation package that the Democrats' only $3.5 trillion bill that has all the other stuff in it. And that's the moderates in the Senate who negotiated that infrastructure bill have always known about that condition, but both sides are sort of talking tough about not liking it. So we'll see.
So let's talk about what's in this bill, Arthur. So many massive things. This bill would finally expand Medicare to include hearing aids, eyeglasses, and dental, which would really be transformative for so many people.
Yeah, and they're talking about lowering the Medicare age. They're talking about continuing. I think the only thing that I really consider a slam dunk for them is they will continue the child tax credit that they put in the American Rescue Plan. It's paying families up to $300 a month per child. That policy's already started. So we know Democrats don't want to let it stop after December when it's scheduled to stop if they don't include it in this bill. And the only question is, are they going to make it permanent or save budget headroom by doing it only through 2025? And all the rest of the stuff, they're definitely overpromising, given not only their constraints, but the political constraints that Sinema and Manchin are trying to add to the process. But there's the Medicare stuff. There's free pre-kindergarten for everybody. There's child nutrition stuff. There's subsidies for childcare. There's paid family leave. It's really sprawling. And this is not even getting into some of the energy provisions and other elements of the bill. I mean, it goes all over. And they haven't even written yet. There's tax stuff in there where they want to have higher corporate and other taxes. They're only beginning to write it, and when we'll see what gets included in the coming weeks, and the hardball negotiating tactics will continue.
Right, and we're going to talk about the climate aspects of the bill in about 10 minutes. A few other things that are so important, as you said, providing universal pre-kindergarten to every 3- and 4-year-old, making community college tuition free, providing paid family and medical leave. I mean, what's amazing about this, Arthur, is these things are so incredibly important. And a lot of European countries already have these policies in place. The United States is one of the only wealthy countries that does not. Again, another one, combating homelessness. This is according to Bernie Sanders' press release, because he lays out just kind of the framework of what he's hoping for. He says that we will combat homelessness and address the reality that nearly 18 million households are paying over 50% of their income for housing by an unprecedented investment in affordable housing. So this is another important one.
Yeah, and I don't even know what their plan is on that. So they did release a standalone anti-homelessness bill this week that presumably is what they would like to put in there. The idea of this legislation is that it's potentially the last train leaving the station for Democratic policymaking, because there's a real, a pretty solid conventional wisdom that they will do badly in the next election, that Democrats might lose the House. They're not in the strongest position in the Senate, where they only have 50 seats, the slimmest possible majority. And Their more moderate members are basically like, we're done with big spending bills. This is the last one you're going to get out of us, and we don't even like your plans to have it cost $3 trillion. So this is it. Like, they're taking the biggest priorities they can think of and glomming them all onto this piece of legislation, and it's a battle to among various factions within the Democratic policy world to figure out what can fit and at what scale, like how long can it last. And this is all happening behind the scenes right now, with groups negotiating with Democrats and Democrats negotiating with each other.
The bill would also fund public housing, green and sustainable housing, rehabilitate aging veteran administration buildings and hospitals, provide workforce development and job training programs. The other huge piece of this, Arthur, is it would provide a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. So as you said, I mean, they're going for everything here. That alone is massive. But can you also talk about that aspect of the bill? Because I just read a report this morning about how a variety of corporations are going to really pressure Congress on these immigration changes. They're actually going to spend seven figures in a campaign coast to coast to make the case that immigration reform is urgent.
I have not reported extensively on their plans for including that in the bill. I know that they included it, and I had the impression right away that they were putting that in there because it's a priority of theirs, and they want to seem like they're doing that, but that they're telegraphing it might not last. It might not remain in there because of this special Senate budget rules they're using, where you're not allowed to do stuff that doesn't have a big budgetary impact. Like, it doesn't either spend a lot of money or raise tax revenue. And so the Senate parliamentarian, this, you know, very obscure bureaucrat, is empowered to say, this is not allowed according to the rules set forth in this law from the 1980s prescribing how the budget reconciliation process works. Anyway, they're saying this isn't going to stay in because of it'll run afoul of Senate rules. So they want to look like they're doing it, but they're already telegraphing that they don't expect it to remain. And then there will be a battle, say, hey, you better overrule the parliamentarian. After all, it's their Senate. You know, they're the ones who set the rules. But they want to appear to be constrained by the rule in the instance of this policy. And this is the same thing that happened with the minimum wage in the American Rescue Plan. They put it in their first draft, and it was clearly a bit of a reach for the budget impact issue. And then the parliamentarian said, sorry, that's got to go. And then they were like, the parliamentarian, our hands are tied. But it's been done before. You can overrule the parliamentarian if you want, and that's just not Joe Biden's style, and Democrats will follow his lead on that.
Today we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, senior reporter for HuffPost, about the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, which would do so much. Expand Medicare to include hearing aids, eyeglasses, dental, fund universal preschool, fund public housing. Well, as Arthur said, the pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants might be taken out. This is really just, right now we're in the very beginning stages of this bill. All the committees must submit their policies to Senator Bernie Sanders' panel, the budget panel, by September 15th. So now is the time to make your voice heard. The politics are also going to get messy in the next month. This bill does not need one Republican vote to pass. It needs all 50 Senate Democrats. The House can only lose 3 Democrats. Things are just so tight. And Senators Kristen Sinema and Joe Manchin already said the bill is too big. Conservative Democrats or moderate Democrats told Speaker Pelosi that they want to vote on the infrastructure bill now. But progressives say they will not vote for the infrastructure bill unless the reconciliation bill passes simultaneously. So what questions and comments do you have about this massive, massive bill? $3.5 trillion. Bernie Sanders said no family making under $400,000 a year will pay a penny more in taxes. We often hear, how are we going to pay for it? It's important to note that the Trump corporate tax cuts cost $2.3 trillion. So that's a 10-year $2.3 trillion compared to this $3.5 trillion. Just important to put that out there. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us @yourcallradio. Arthur, what about that question? How are we going to pay for it? It's always asked, and sure, it's important, but it needs some context given how many tax cuts for the wealthy that we've seen in the past decade.
It's actually a great question. The last several bills that Congress passed in response to the coronavirus pandemic, those were massive trillion-dollar bills that just weren't paid for at all. And this one is different. This time, Democrats are saying, this is a $3.5 trillion bill, but we're going to pay for it. So they're saying that it won't actually cost that amount. That's just to give you that's the scale of the bill. Its actual budgetary impact is supposed to be much less than that. And the way they achieve that lower cost is by jacking up taxes on, they say the taxes will go up on corporations and the wealthy, and nobody whose household income is less than $400,000 a year, as if that's not like really wealthy to start with. But what they will do is include provisions that undo parts of the Republican tax law from 2017, but also, you know, we're looking for new stuff like a wealth tax, a higher estate tax, changes in capital gains taxes. So it's real revenue that they will be extracting through these provisions. But those things also make it more complicated within the Democratic caucus, because you have all these moderates who are, you know, tugging their collars about higher taxes. Like, for instance, Joe Manchin doesn't like the idea of a 28% corporate tax rate like Joe Biden proposed, but he'd settle for 25%. Then you lose several hundred billion dollars. So you have to make that up somewhere else. So it's a complicated puzzle, and taxes are a huge piece of it, and definitely part of the back and forth intra-party fighting.
Right, and we should remind everyone that the Trump corporate income tax rate shrank from 35% to 21%. So 35% to 21%. I mean, this was a monumental corporate tax cut. And according to the New York Times, those cuts totaled $5.5 trillion. And we're just learning a lot more about what went on the scenes, behind the scenes, to get that massive cut. Let's hear from Ruth Ann in El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Need a clarification question. I'm under the impression, and I think I'm correct, that the reconciliation bill includes expanding Medicare to include vision, dental, and hearing.
Right.
And what yes. I wanted, my question was, I didn't know if it was also going to be including prescription drugs.
Yes, thank you. This is really important because this would require Medicare to finally negotiate prescription drug prices. Can you talk about that, Arthur?
That is like the tax increases. That is part of the bill that's supposed to reduce its cost. They're supposed to get hundreds of billions in savings by lowering the price of prescriptions drugs through empowering Medicare to negotiate those prices. So they say that's in there. That is yet another thing, though, where you get moderate Democrats squirming. So, you know, wait and see. But that's certainly part of their plan. The funny thing about this is they pass a budget resolution, and it's purely symbolic, except that it initiates the process that allows them to later pass the actual legislation that includes all the policies. So they're going to have a vote soon on the resolution, and then that will only allow the final vote on legislation, but that means we won't see that for weeks, so we won't know what's in there, but that's what they say they will include.
You know, I'd love to have some of these moderate Dems on. We're going to definitely invite them in the coming weeks, because I'd like to know, why is it that why don't they agree with Medicare negotiating prescription drug prices just like the VA does?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I haven't talked to them about it.
The cynics among us can say, well, the pharmaceutical company is so powerful, but I mean, this is just, we should have done this a long time ago. The VA negotiates these prices. Medicare should do the same. But if Democrats are going to work really hard on getting this in the bill, and we'll see if it's kept in. Thank you, Ruth Ann. We're going to stay on top of that. Let's go next to Dave in San Francisco. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi, Rose. I was interested in, right now, if I understand right, and your economist could probably back this up, interest rates are extremely low. And for doing bond issues, this is the perfect time for doing bond issues. You know, every point that it increases, you know, it's unbelievably, the curve goes straight up and down. But so I'm just wondering, as I understand it, with infrastructure, every congressional district has got things that need to be repaired. And so every congressional district needs to submit something to the infrastructure bill, especially after the census. you know, if you know that 10 million people are in your county and you're going to have 10 million butts on the toilet every morning, your sewers need to be this big, your fresh water system needs to be that big, your levees need to be this strong. So every, you know, since America owns a lot of property, it needs to repair it, and the census data comes in, and then the infrastructure bill is put together for what's the next 10 years worth of building that we need to do.
And well, thanks for the call. Let me get a comment from Arthur. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the caller is saying, isn't it a good time to borrow money?
Right.
Is that a fair summary?
I believe so, because, right, the interest rates are so, so low right now, especially for corporations buying money. We just did a show about that.
So there are two things. There are influential economists who are saying it's time to worry about inflation. And these are people who the White House listens to, influential former Council of Economic Advisors type people. Because inflation is a strong attack that Republicans have. Inflation would be a bad thing. I don't know if those economists are the correct ones. I tend to think the inflation situation right now is a little inflated, you could say. But they're worried about that, both politically and economically. And the other thing is, members of Congress themselves, you know, for no economic reason at all, are just tired of big numbers. People like Joe Manchin, I mean. And so while the caller might be completely right, like it's interest rates are low, go ahead and borrow money. Those are the constraints that are preventing Democrats from Joe Biden, like from just going ahead and doing that. They're listening to these economists who are worried about inflation, and they're worried about the political attacks about inflation. Plus, they've got to bring along enough of these moderates who are just tired of big numbers.
Well, thank you for the call. Today we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, senior reporter for HuffPost. We're talking about the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. We talked about the $1 trillion infrastructure bill on Monday. Now I'd like to welcome Natalie Mabane to the show. Natalie is associate director of U.S. policy at 350.org, a nonprofit working to end the age of fossil fuels. Hi, Natalie. Thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. So Natalie, just to talk about politics here, progressive Democrats said that they would agree to the very watered down infrastructure bill as long as major climate policies made their way into this $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. So what's your read on it so far?
Well, I definitely am happy that there are many very progressive Democrats who have stated very clearly no climate, no deal, which is that they are not going to vote to pass the infrastructure bill that already passed the Senate just recently, unless the reconciliation bill is complete and unless it has serious climate provisions, which were unfortunately missing from infrastructure. So I am very happy for them to take that position. This is really the last possible moment that we can do anything to act on climate change. We can no longer kick this can down the road, and we must address it immediately, and we have to use the $3.5 trillion reconciliation package to do that.
Now, we know that this is just sort of a basic plan. All of the committees have to get together and provide their policies to Senator Bernie Sanders by September 15th. So again, now is the time for people to make their voices heard. Can you just give us a sense of what really stands out for you in this? Because according to Bernie Sanders, he says this would meet the administration's goal for the United States to get 80% of its power from emissions-free sources by 2030. Can you give us a kind of a rundown, Natalie, of what this bill would do to get us there?
Absolutely. Well, it really depends on what happens in the next few weeks. So there is no guarantee of really anything. If we, you know, learned anything from watching the very long and in-depth infrastructure package, is that anything can change within the legislation. Of course, President Biden put forward his fact sheet all the way back on March 31st for the American Jobs Plan, which is what started all of this. But in terms of what will actually make it in, we'll have to see. I think Senator Sanders, obviously being a leading voice on climate, he wants to ensure that you know, trillions of dollars are designated for actually getting off of fossil fuels and no longer giving subsidies and all the things such as that to the fossil fuel industry. In fact, him and Representative Omar introduced a bill earlier this year. They also introduced it last Congress, called the End Polluter Welfare Act, which is designed to end all fossil fuel subsidies completely. And I know that that's definitely a priority of Senator Sanders. And I do hope that it becomes a serious priority for the rest of the Democrats as well.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we're talking about the massive $3.5 trillion reconciliation plan that would affect everything from the climate crisis. It would expand Medicare, fund universal preschool, ensure that community colleges are tuition free. There is so much in this bill. We're just in the beginning stages. And so we wanted to let you know this was happening because we know that so much is going on right now. But now is the time to make your voice heard on this reconciliation bill. Natalie Mabane is Associate Director of U.S. Policy at 350.org. Arthur Delaney is Senior Reporter for HuffPost. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable, and we will discuss coverage of the fall of the U.S.-backed Afghan government and the Taliban's takeover. We decided not to do an Afghan show this week because it was being covered nonstop, and we also could not get in touch with a number of our last Afghan guests. They are okay, but they just said there was just too much going on and they couldn't join us. And so tomorrow, we have been following the coverage closely. What stands out for you about the coverage of what is happening in Afghanistan? We hope you can join us tomorrow. Today, we are talking about the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill. The next month is going to be crucial because progressive House Democrats say they will not vote for the infrastructure bill unless the reconciliation bill passes simultaneously. But 9 moderate Democrats say they want a vote on the infrastructure bill now. And then you've got Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema saying the reconciliation bill is too big. The House can only afford to lose 3 Democrats. The Senate cannot afford to lose any. So now is the time to make your voice heard. And if you have any questions about this, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Arthur Delaney is a senior reporter for HuffPost, where he's been covering the bill. Natalie Mabane is associate director of U.S. policy at 350.org, a nonprofit working to end the age of fossil fuels. Natalie, Senator Joe Manchin has been quoted saying that he thinks this reconciliation bill is all about, well, ending the age of fossil fuels, and he does not agree with that. So how do you at 350.org and other organizations plan to put the pressure on Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema over the next month?
Absolutely not a surprising statement whatsoever by Senator Joe Manchin. I think he has been very consistent in his support of fossil fuels. He's also said multiple times that he does not believe that we are going to have a fossil-free future, that he believes fossil fuels essentially should always play a role. So yeah, that is exactly what I expected from him. He is directly being paid by the fossil fuel industry to represent them in the halls of the United States Senate. And so that's one of their biggest advocates, as we saw from that release from the senior lobbyist at Exxon, Keith McCoy, that is somebody that he is in touch with on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. And so that is exactly what we would expect. In the end, yes, we do need all 50 votes to go through in the Senate in order for the reconciliation package to continue. Our push of what we are doing at 350.org is to really mobilize our base of supporters to show the support that there is for this reconciliation package and for getting off of fossil fuels as a whole. You know, overwhelming majority of the country completely believes in human-caused climate change. So because a few senators in our Senate and a few members in our House do not believe in it, that's not going to stop progress. So we are, of course, asking all of our members and anyone listening to call both, you know, their own senators, as well as contact Joe Manchin's office yourself and tell them exactly exactly why we need to end the fossil fuel future. We have all experienced and are very much seeing the current effects of climate change, not even just the future effects, but what we are experiencing right now with 1.1 degrees of Celsius warming from pre-industrial levels. And with the IPCC report that came out recently, that has said very clearly this is code red for humanity. And so I think that if looking at this overall, I have to see if he's willing to tank his entire package of the infrastructure package for him to say we are not going to phase out fossil fuels. Is he going to be the lone senator, along with possibly Kyrsten Sinema, to tank all of the work that they have done that they wanted from the infrastructure package? And the infrastructure package gives them lots and lots of what they actually want in terms of still propping up fossil fuels, unfortunately. So we'll see if this is just him, you know, doing his sort of like a big talk to say, I am going to be the one that determines what passes. In the end, Congress might not pass anything. Him and Kyrsten Sinema could decide that they're not going forward with the package at all, and all of this was just a waste of everyone's time. I'm hoping that's not the case, because I do want to see the reconciliation package passing, depending on what's in it. But we're going to see. But we're going to continue putting the pressure on from our lobbying efforts, as well as from our grassroots organizing efforts of our members.
We have an email from Harry who says, Harry, frustrated in Berkeley. Sinema and Manchin's obstruction is extremely frustrating and wrongheaded. But what can a single citizen who doesn't live in their states do to urge them to see reason? Should non-constituents even be trying? Is it counterproductive? I can imagine that yelling at them from the West Coast isn't very useful. What are your thoughts on that, Natalie?
Very good question. I know that can be frustrating where your senators might be in a good place and you're like, does that even influence? One other target in the Senate is always Chuck Schumer as the majority leader. He's going to be essentially the main negotiator with his caucus to ensure that everybody is in line and supporting certain provisions. So one of the people you can target in terms of your pressure is directly to Chuck Schumer's office, both by calling, emailing, tweeting at them to say, do not make a deal with either, you know, Joe Manchin or Kyrsten Sinema or anyone that includes cutting climate provisions. You have to, at this point in time, if we choose not to act on climate change and we head into the next COP negotiations coming up in the end of October, early November, we're not going to really have anything to stand on to say that we have actually taken any climate action. So still contact your own senators as well to ensure that they take a hard line stance, no climate, no deal. But at the same time, contact Chuck Schumer's office to ensure that whatever negotiations he comes up with, that he does not trade out climate action in order to keep the Democratic caucus together.
Arthur, before we let you go, what are your thoughts on this? What are you hearing from various groups that have been fighting for the climate, for Medicare expansion, for pre-K school, community colleges? How are they planning to organize in the next month?
Well, I'm more familiar with the inside game that groups play, which I guess is not really your question. It's different from organizing. It's where you're people are working on their contacts on Capitol Hill through old school lobbying, you know, talking to staff and making sure they understand that you're part of an important constituency and that you're paying really close attention to what's in and what's out and what's on the bubble of this legislation. You know, one area where I have focused is the Supplemental Security Income Program for people who are blind or disabled. No, that program hasn't been updated in 20 years, and policy advocates who are familiar with it, they see this is the last chance because Democrats could lose power, and they've been left out of the outlines, but they're looking to get like some sort of consolation where some aspect of the program is made more generous so that fewer of its beneficiaries remain in poverty. So that's what I am seeing. People trying to work on the staff level, get the attention of the folks who are actually drafting the legislation right now.
We have a question you might be able to answer, Arthur. Paul says, what is Dianne Feinstein's position on all of this? Do you know?
Dianne Feinstein is one of the more moderate members. I would defer to Natalie on what's Dianne Feinstein's position on the green elements of the legislation, but she's one of the quieter moderates. You know, Joe Manchin is been happy to take all the heat for opposing filibuster reform, but Feinstein, I think, has probably agreed with what he's been saying a lot of the time.
And Arthur, one more question, because you follow what's going on Capitol Hill very closely. Nancy Pelosi has a really important role to play here. We briefly touched on this earlier. One of our listeners wanted us to name the 9 House members who want to vote on the infrastructure package now. Representatives Josh Gothmeyer of New Jersey, Carolyn Bordeaux of Georgia, Feilman Vella of Texas, Jared Golden of Maine, Henry Cellular of Texas, Vicente Gonzalez of Texas, Ed Case of Hawaii, Jim Costa of California, and Kurt Schrader of Oregon. I'm sorry if I got any of these names wrong. So can you just tell us Pelosi, what her position in all of this? Because she's got the moderates basically saying, we want to vote on the infrastructure bill now, and the progressives saying, no way, we're only going to do that if we pass the reconciliation bill at the same time.
Well, Pelosi's plan was to have a vote on the budget that allows for the reconciliation bill later at the same time as the infrastructure package. And so her position has not changed, and I don't think it will change. And we haven't seen her embarrassed in too many situations. Like, she's pretty good at whipping, which is the Capitol Hill word for just marshaling votes in favor of your legislation. So I would be surprised if this blows up in her face. I feel like she knows what she's doing, but we'll see.
Well, Arthur, as always, thank you for your reporting, and thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Arthur Delaney is senior reporter with HuffPost, where he is covering all of these issues. You can find his stories at yourcallradio.org. Natalie Mabane is associate director of U.S. policy at 350.org, a nonprofit working to end the age of fossil fuels. And now we'd like to welcome Ashley McCray Eagle to the show. Ashley is the Green New Deal Network organizer at the Indigenous Environmental Network. Hi, Ashley. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me here.
Well, it's great to have you, Ashley. Before we talk about where the Indigenous Environmental Network stands on all of this, I mean, it's sad, but it really comes down to the politics, right? The pressure has to be on Senators Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema, because they say that the $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill is just too big. So how does the Indigenous Environmental Network plan to, you know, raise awareness about this important bill in the next month?
Yeah, so we're really heavily engaged in this process through two of our networks. One of them is called the United Frontline Table, which is really a policy space that represents and uplifts and centers frontlines and grassroots. We're also a part of the Green New Deal National Network, and that's the group that's behind the Thrive Act, which really calls for a $10 trillion investment over 10 years. And so our positioning around this is that, you know, of course, we really think that the bipartisan bill that was just passed is really lackluster. And we're standing, you know, behind the Congressional Progressive Caucus's positioning, which is really that both of these bills need to be passed at the same time. And even more than that, this reconciliation bill has to match this $3.5 trillion investment that is being promised to our communities. It can't be a penny less, because we're already, you know, suffering from being on the front lines of the climate crisis. We're already suffering from racial injustice and lack of housing and healthcare and all of these other things that this infrastructure bill will really cover. And so, you know, as far as the investment in Indian country goes, you know, this really is, you know, we can't go without saying that this is an historic investment in Indian country, and there are tribal set asides. And so we are happy about that. But really, when we break the numbers down, the investment in the bipartisan bill only allots for about $55,000 per tribe per year. And so, you know, that's obviously not enough to run an entire program and its facilities for a whole entire sovereign nation. And so, you know, we're going to be doing our best to, you know, push not only on these investments in Indian country and pushing, you know, these committees and standing with our champions to uplift free prior informed consent for our tribal nations, but we're also going to be very keenly interested in how the climate situation plays out on each of these committees. And we've been invested in and involved in the Justice 40 initiative. And so that's one place where we're really putting a lot of our, you know, eggs in that basket. We've heard that, you know, the chair of the House and Oversight Reform Committee is very friendly toward, you know, some of our recommendations around, you know, Indigenous communities and other investments in disadvantaged communities. And so we're really happy about that. We know that she subscribes to a 100% no harm principle. And so we're hoping that that will expand to the climate considerations because, you know, we're dying here literally, and we don't have, you know, a second longer to fight, you know, fight for our communities and fight to ensure that, you know, future generations have healthy land, air and water for many generations to come.
How would the reconciliation bill specifically deal with the keep it in the ground demands? Because when you think about what's going on with Line 3, so many Native activists have been arrested. They have been shot with rubber bullets. They've been dealing with tear gas. And just yesterday, I believe it was, a number of Indigenous activists met with UN human rights experts. Winona LaDuc of Honor the Earth said that the Biden administration has turned a blind eye, so we hope that international attention can protect the rights of our people and the water we all depend on. I mean, this is happening as we speak. Native activists are fighting Line 3 and getting arrested. What would this bill do for the Keep It in the Ground movement?
Yeah, so unfortunately, you know, that is a huge uphill battle, especially with the Biden administration and this Congress. Unfortunately, it does skew towards neoliberal policies, which are unfortunately very anathema to Indigenous lifeways and, you know, our sacred practices and continuing those. Already in the bipartisan infrastructure package that was just passed, it's rolled back NEPA, which is the National Environmental Protection Act, as well as allowing way for an Alaska gas pipeline to be built and a carbon sequestration pipeline to be built through Iowa, Minnesota, which is where the Line 3 fight currently is in much of the Midwest. And so we're going to be doing our best to, you know, put our pressure where we can and to ally ourselves with those who seem friendly. And so we think going to the House Oversight Committee will be a good place to, you know, practice this effort. We're going to be pushing really hard against what we're calling false solutions, which are, you know, carbon capture, carbon markets, carbon tax, which we see are really only further impacting our Indigenous communities and really only kicking the can of problems down the road for future generations to deal with. And so, unfortunately, there's not a lot of good news there, but we are going to continue fighting, and we're going to continue doing our best to educate our allies and our relatives around what carbon capture really is, what these false solutions really do to our communities, and that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, you know, this is contributing to the climate crisis. And we cannot forget our relatives to the global South who are, you know, being hard hit by the decisions that we're making up here in the northern part of Turtle Island. And so I just really want to uplift that too. And, you know, I heard the call to action earlier, and I think, you know, here as well, you know, we have really good friends with the Congressional Progressive Caucus. They're, you know, learning very quickly. You know, I want to give a special shout out to Cori Bush. Her office especially has, you know, been a major champion of, you know, fighting against false solutions and fighting on behalf of Indigenous sovereignty and free prior informed consent. And I think that by doing that work of pushing for federal codification of free prior informed consent, this will help ensure that pipelines like Line 3, which was not approved and not consented by the Anishinaabe people, to no longer, you know, impact our communities, which, you know, in turn impact the rest of America. And so, you know, just reminding, you know, all of the listeners that we are all connected in a circle of life. And that, you know, what impacts Indigenous communities may be happening now, and you may not feel these repercussions, but this is, you know, one planet that we're all living on. You know, we're all dependent on this land, this earth, you know, this air and this water. And, you know, we can't afford to let it be degraded any further.
That is Ashley McCrae Eagle, Green New Deal Network organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. We're also joined by Natalie Mabane, Associate Director of U.S. Policy at 350.org. Natalie, when the IPCC report came out, the head of the UN did not mince words. He said that the report must sound a death knell for coal and fossil fuels before they destroy our planet. So same question to you. How does this reconciliation bill deal with the leave it in the ground demands?
Well, we will soon see. I think from what, you know, the head of the UN said and what the IPCC report itself said is that, yeah, this is it. This is the last alarm, the last warning. We can decide in this moment, which we're in, to continue using fossil fuels, or we can immediately make the transition off of fossil fuels to renewable energy, which we already have renewable energy, as well as investing in energy efficiency, which creates jobs as well. I think we'll have to see what really happens in this reconciliation package. That's going to be determined in the next several weeks as they start working on it, especially when they return from August recess, to really flesh out what they're going to do. Are they going to include billions of dollars for carbon capture and sequestration like they did in the infrastructure package that passed the Senate? Are they going to include billions in new handouts and subsidies to the fossil fuel industry just like the infrastructure package did? And so I think that's our biggest concern, is that they won't go big enough, and that if they do put in particular climate provisions, that it could actually be handouts to the fossil fuel industry like we saw in the infrastructure package. This whole carbon capture sequestration idea is really designed to keep the fossil fuel industry in business. That's all it is. It's saying, give us billions of more dollars to continue existing and continuing polluting the world, where we absolutely know that this is the turning point for all of human history. And what we do now as a world will determine what future we have as a civilization. So it is the most critical time. And that is why it is so important that everyone listening not only contacts their House member, because their House is going to be negotiating as well, but also contacts their senators, as well as Senator Schumer and Speaker Pelosi, to ensure that they are hearing the message that you will not accept anything less than actual climate action that phases out fossil fuels, stops giving fossil fuel subsidies to taxpayer dollars to fossil fuel companies, and actually transitions to clean energy.
Well, if you have any questions or comments on this $3.5 trillion reconciliation bill, we've got just a couple minutes left. 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. As Natalie said, now is the time to make your voice heard. The next month will be crucial. We're going to get final policies by September 15th. That is when various committees have to submit their policies to Senator Bernie Sanders' budget panel. We have an email from Marianne who says, how are we going to pay for it? Besides taxing the wealthy, of course, the Pentagon budget needs to be cut. And actually, this is really important because this hardly ever gets talked about. But recently, Senate lawmakers said that they want to increase the Pentagon budget by $25 billion, which would boost the $716 billion budget base. And it looks like this is going to be a bipartisan effort. This definitely deserves so much more attention, but important point. Thank you for that email. I also just wanted to ask you, Ashley, you know, there are so many other things in this bill that would create major changes in Indian country, expanding Medicare, funding universal preschool, free community college tuition. Can you just talk about the social services aspect of this bill and how that would affect Indian country? We have just a couple minutes left.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, this is absolutely one thing about the Biden administration. It's kind of a double-edged sword from our organizational standpoint, because, you know, while there are, you know, these false solutions and, you know, these infringes on tribal sovereignty coming from the administration, on the other hand, and Congress, on the other hand, there's also, you know, these historic investments in Indian country. And we know that this is the most that, you know, this Congress has, you know, ever, you know, invested in our tribe states and in our nations. And so, you know, one of the things that we're, you know, excited about is that there will be a Native American Civilian Climate Corps that will have, you know, this money set aside. And I think that that's, you know, one of the things that I think is definitely a win in this bill for Indian Country, is that some of this funding has been set aside for tribal nations specifically. And that goes back to the treaty obligations between the federal government and each of the 576 federally recognized tribal nations here on Turtle Island. And so, you know, as far as that goes, as far as, you know, being able to expand hospitals and expand, you know, infrastructure projects. I live in rural Oklahoma. And so, you know, being able to have access to, you know, better internet and better, you know, roads and bridges will impact my life, you know, on a very, you know, on the ground level. But still, you know, that investment is not enough, because the fact is that for generations and generations, the federal government has actually underinvested in Indian Country and other vulnerable communities. And so what we're needing to see is not only that overinvestment, but also that divestment from harm, from some of these false solutions and, you know, fossil fuel projects that are, you know, at the same time, you know, harming our communities. And so, you know, like Natalie said, you know, it'll be a wait and see thing. But, you know, we are happy about the investment in Indian Country, but we still think that, you know, there is much more work to be done.
And Natalie, in about 30 seconds, can you tell us why so many young people are so excited about the Civilian Climate Corps?
Absolutely. I think that it's something that is tangible that we can actually do to help improve our economy and help improve our climate overall. I think that, you know, the Civilian Climate Corps, of course, modeled after the original CCCs under FDR, is essentially what we need to help building back better, as the president says. And so I think that it's great that it has a lot of support, both by Senator Schumer and others, and that it seems like it's a pretty strong priority for the administration as well.
And this would put thousands of young people to work to transform the energy system and protect frontline communities. And we will definitely bring you more about this in the coming month. Thanks to our guest today, Natalie Mabain, Associate Director of U.S. Policy at 350.org, a nonprofit working to end the age of fossil fuels. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Ashley McCrae Eagle is Green New Deal Network Organizer with the Indigenous Environmental Network. Ashley, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Niawe and Wopiwa.
Thank you. And thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. You can find more information about the reconciliation bill and the infrastructure bill. We talked about that on Monday. Spread the word. Now is the time to make your voices heard, because the next month will be crucial. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.